Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pace. In this hour, we're talking about how young people in the Bay Area are leading the charge against abusive relationships. This month marks the 8th anniversary of the death of Yardley Love, a college student at the University of Virginia, who was killed by her boyfriend. In the investigation that followed, family and friends were heartbroken to learn that her death may have been avoided. Founded in her memory by Yardley's mother and sister, the One Love Foundation teaches young people how to identify the warning signs of an unhealthy romance. Tonight, we're talking about how teens are teaching other teens how to navigate dangerous relationships and how to make the call between what's love and what's not. Joining me here in the studio is Megan Shackleton, the Bay Area Executive Director of the One Love Foundation. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
We're also joined by Megan Gray. She's the West Coast Engagement Coordinator for One Love.
So excited to be here.
And we also have a Jamie Jay, a junior at the University of San Francisco and a college ambassador for the One Love Foundation. She launched the university's on-campus chapter and works with students nationwide to bring awareness of the program to other schools. Welcome, Jamie.
Hi.
And we're finally joined by Olivia Enriquez, a junior at Aragon High School in San Mateo. She's one of the founding members of One Love's Teen Ambassador Program in the Bay Area, raising awareness about relationship abuse through community and on-campus discussion groups with students and adults. Welcome, Olivia.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
And, of course, we want you, our listeners, to join our conversation. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes. I'll give you that phone number now. It's 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KLW website, or you can tweet us at cityvisions@kalw. So I want to start with Megan Shackleton. We hear in the news every day, more and more in the last few months, how smart, successful, strong people get caught up in abusive personal relationships. Help us understand what the frequency of this type of incident is in our country and how it may be changing.
So relationship abuse is an incredibly pervasive issue. One in three women and one in four men will be in an abusive relationship in their lifetime. And I think one of the things we often don't recognize is that women between the ages of 16 and 24 are actually three times more likely than any other demographic to be in an abusive relationship. So this is what's typically referred to as sort of domestic violence is actually often not domestic and is typically happening in very early relationships.
Mm. And tell us, how has this changed over the years? Has it always been steady at this rate?
I'm not exactly sure, but it's been a pretty prevalent issue throughout time.
Okay. Because I'm also curious how those numbers may change over time as there's more attention paid to this issue.
Yeah. I mean, our hope is that we will ultimately change the statistics around relationship violence by educating and around prevention. And so what we've really found in our work is that young people aren't being educated about what it means to be in a healthy or an unhealthy relationship and the difference between healthy and unhealthy behaviors. Mm. And so our goal is to change those statistics by actually educating young people sooner about what it means to be in a healthy relationship.
And so tell us a little bit more about the One Love Foundation. How did it get started?
Yeah. So as you referenced, One Love was founded in memory of a woman named Yardley Love. Yardley was a senior at the University of Virginia when 3 weeks before her graduation, she was beaten to death by her ex-boyfriend. When it happened, her family really thought it was a random act of violence. They thought it was something that couldn't have been avoided, that he was passionate and upset and angry. They really... Relationship violence was the furthest thing from their mind. Yardley was strong. She was independent. She was a D1 athlete. She was sort of broke the stereotypes in their mind of who would be in a quote-unquote abusive relationship. And it wasn't actually until about 2 years later when they went through the trial and they started really reflecting on the trajectory of their relationship when they started hearing the friends, her friends take the witness stand and talk about the things they had seen in the relationship. And they started realizing that there were aspects of really primarily emotional abuse throughout the relationship, things like anger and control and manipulation. These signs that unfortunately didn't raise red flags for the friends because they're things that we've come to normalize around us in relationships and we've come to think of as okay. But they also learned those statistics about relationship violence that that I shared earlier and really came to realize that Yardley Love had been in an abusive relationship throughout and that had she, her friends, or her family really understood what she was experiencing and had the ability to have a conversation about it, that she'd be alive today. So we were founded for one sole reason, which is that Yardley Love was killed and her death was avoidable. And so we really want to give others the education that she, her friends, and her family didn't have about really what these early warning signs of abuse look like. We take a very strong focus on emotional abuse, recognizing that people often know what a hit or a punch or a kick looks like and that that's not okay. But there's this bigger, seemingly gray area that her friends had seen that we see all around us all the time around emotional abuse. So that's really where our focus lies.
So this sounds like perhaps a movement that's similar to others where parents, mothers in particular, get involved to draw attention to an issue that is failing to capture notice. MAD or Mothers Against Drunk Driving comes to mind. Tell us how much you know about the family and in terms of what they're hoping to achieve in terms of a national conversation and how they see themselves connected maybe to similar movements of the past.
It's a great question. And actually, when Sharon Love, who's Yardley's mom, was conceptualizing what she wanted this organization to be and do, the first thing out of her mouth was that she wanted to do for relationship violence what Mothers Against Drunk Driving did for drunk driving, which is two things. One is to stigmatize the behaviors, make it socially unacceptable to be demonstrating these unhealthy behaviors in our community. And the second is to give bystanders the ability to take away the keys. So we take a really strong focus on those that are around us in relationships, and it really is a community change approach. What we want to do is change the way people talk about relationships and give them the tools to have this conversation. Often when you're in a relationship yourself, one, it's very hard to see these signs when you're experiencing them, when you get deep in these situations, and two, it's often hard to know what to do about it when you do see it. So we really focus on the friends, the parents, the families, the community members, the coaches, and really about changing the conversation and changing the way people talk about relationships. Very often we use things like when we see people in an unhealthy relationship, we say things like, it's not my business, it's personal, it's their situation, it's not my place to say. But the reality is,
it's a domestic dispute.
Exactly. But what we're trying to do is change communities to be communities where we actually see it as our responsibility to have this conversation with our friends and to nurture and support healthy relationships around us.
So it sounds like, Megan Gray, I want to turn to you next, that this is about not just trying to help educate, raise awareness, give tools to an individual, but to also change norms at the campus societal levels and to also kind of invite a more collective responsibility for this. Tell us how that comes about in the programming that you put together.
Definitely. So our programming is twofold. So we use film-based content to open students' eyes to the warning signs, and then we have conversations. So every film that we show, we follow it up with a discussion that's either 20 minutes all the way to 40 minutes long, where students can come together and talk about what this looks like in their community and how they can address these behaviors and what is the language we can use to talk about it. So we go on to colleges, high schools, middle schools, sports teams, families. We work with every aspect of the community because exactly what you were saying, this isn't a one-person movement. If we really want to change these statistics, it's going to involve everyone in the community to stigmatize these behaviors and shift the norms.
And this is Megan Shackleton. We also know that it's not a one and done. We do these educational conversations, and that really gets the core education out, helping young people understand the difference between healthy and unhealthy relationship behaviors. But that really is the starting point in a community. What we're really looking to do is mobilize students in particular to continue that conversation on their campus. And so a lot of our conversations are we complete any of our conversations with activation pieces where we actually call students to action to continue this conversation in their community. So they'll be hosting, they'll creating Team One Love Clubs on their campus. They're creating their own film content. They're hosting events. They're doing activation campaigns. And we really believe that it's this combination of spreading the education to a critical mass of students combined with activating young people to continue the conversation that's ultimately going to achieve the change we're after.
So, Jamie Jay from USF, you are responsible for bringing a chapter or club of One Love to your campus. Tell us what inspired you to do this, and what was the reaction of those around you as you try to make a case for this?
Definitely. So it originally started with my sorority, which Yardley Love was actually part of as well at UVA. So we had a sisterhood event, and it was my sophomore year, about a year ago. There was an escalation workshop held within the sorority. And right there and then, we went through it, we watched it, and like Megan Gray said, we broke off into conversation, and we started talking about it, and we made it a safe environment. We were like, wow, we've been in these like relationships, we've seen friends go through this, you know, those 10, you know, unhealthy signs of a relationship. And so right there and then, you know, they called from, it started there where I was like, I want to start a club on campus. Like, why does USF not have this? I feel like we're a pretty diverse campus and we're always bringing awareness to things. And this was something that was not brought. And so, you know, my sisters, you know, and my sorority were like, I want to help you out. Let's do this. And so it's great. We have a group of us that, you know, bring on tabling and just bringing awareness and just even talking to anyone in the Greek community or the athletes and, you know, whoever we're friends with on campus. So right there and then, it was a topic that we were not aware about, and we were able to talk about it and be like, we see this a lot, and it's in our friendships and, you know, our own relationships and whatnot. And, you know, it's a topic, again, I think that's swept under the rug. And so that's how it kind of started, in an escalation workshop with us.
So it seemed pretty easy to get going?
I don't think, you know, anything's easy to get going. It's always going to be a struggle and patience. I was just explaining to someone that the other day that, you know, when you start something, it has to grow, and you need to have people from the community, you know, like Megan S. was saying, that it starts with us, and we have to get the volunteers off the ground. And so it's still a working in progress, and it's never going to be easy, I think, but one day it will get there, and we'll be able to really spread it across, you know, hopefully the West, you know, West Coast and whatnot. So,
where is it at this stage? Is it spread beyond your sorority chapter?
We're moving towards, we've actually held workshops with, Megan Gray's been helping with the athletes and spreading that, workshops there. Next is in the fall, we have recruitment. And so we want to hit the, you know, Greek communities more, and start that awareness. We have these, you know, Greek leadership institutes. And so we have educational workshops that, you know, happen. And so our next goal is to have, you know, One Love come in and start a workshop with us, mm-hmm. with the Greek community.
And yeah, Megan Gray.
I'm happy to add that the Title IX team at USF has been incredibly supportive of our programming, and we meet with them often, and they support the club, and we'll be bringing this in some form to their orientation to all freshmen, which is huge because that's getting that core group of students right when they get on campus. And as Jamie said, that way they can funnel into this club and realize that there is a group that supports me here on this campus, cares about these issues, and wants to bring happy, healthy relationships to USF.
So you've talked about so far is the involvement at the sorority level, and it's spreading, getting athletes involved, female, male, both?
Definitely both. I mean, in the sorority, all girls, it's there, but I think it's also going to be spreading towards, you know, like we said, it's a profile that's not just females or just male, but I think it hits all aspects. I've heard males even talk about, you know, some of the relationships they've been in. So it's definitely growing with, you know, not just females, but yeah. Mm.
So Megan Gray, say more about that.
Well, that our content takes an approach that this is a human issue, that everyone is affected. As Megan touched on earlier, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men are going to be in this type of relationship. So we have this discussion so that everyone feels involved. And that has had so many students come up to us at the end of a workshop, male and female, and they will say, I've been in this relationship. I've been the abuser or the victim. How do I work towards loving better? I love that we use the terms healthy and unhealthy, because when I hear the words domestic violence or abuse, I immediately think, that's not me. But as soon as you say unhealthy, I think, yes, I could work to be healthier. And that approach has really made One Love a strong programming in a lot of schools, because students really relate to those phrases, those wordings that we choose. Mm.
So Megan Shackleton, how did the concept of bringing males and females together, I don't want to say boys and girls, just so it's not right, and men and women is maybe a little bit, how did that start? Because I imagine this is uncomfortable, and if you're a perpetrator or abuser, what's the where's the space for you to kind of be part of this conversation? How do you work towards this not becoming sort of blaming or pointing fingers at, you know, at people?
It's a great question. I think from the beginning, we've known that this is a human issue, not a women's issue. And so that is core to our messaging. It's core to how we talk about this. This issue doesn't discriminate against race, sexual orientation, gender. Really, it's consistent across the board, and the types of behaviors are consistent across the board. And particularly when it comes to emotional abuse, men are very often the victims and women are very often the perpetrators. But I think what's even more important is this broader community change goal, which makes it a space that's okay for everyone. And so you don't walk in the room on the defense thinking about, is this me? Am I doing this? Is this it happening in my relationship? You walk in the room and you enter the conversation thinking about, how can I support the people in my community to have healthier relationships, the people that I care about? And I think it's made a very welcoming place for men, because I think often this conversation often puts these types of conversations put men on the defense and are sort of accusatory. And I think we take a very proactive approach to not do that and to let everyone know that they have a role to play. And so the vast majority of us are good guys and good girls and have a voice. And so being able to give those men that voice in the conversation to say, either if they're seeing these behaviors in their friends' relationships, regardless of gender, giving them the tools to start that conversation. And to your point about people who are sort of perpetrating these behaviors, we want to give them the space to recognize the opportunity to get help. So one of our biggest goals, actually, as an organization, is to reduce the barrier it takes to get expert help. We use a train-the-trainer model where actually young people are facilitating the conversation on our behalf. We make it very clear that they are not the experts. They're there to start this conversation and to educate about the early warning signs, but not to try to help somebody who's actively in a situation. And so what that means is that we are helping young people understand that there are these amazing resources in the community. There are, whether they're domestic violence-related, counseling services on their campus, national resources, helping them understand the ease of which they can access them, and that it doesn't take being punched in the face to text a domestic violence hotline and start this conversation. It doesn't have to be your relationship to start this conversation. And so that really is a part of the conversation, and including, again, both men and women in that, to give them the space to be comfortable reaching out to those resources.
Are there so-called adults in the room when these sessions occur? Megan Gray?
Yes. So we work with schools to provide on-site counselors whenever we have these workshops. So whether the school is providing their actual resources that they have in-house or they're bringing in local resources, we work in the city with Casa de las Madres, on the peninsula with CORA, to provide that additional support so that students can get the direct help that they need. We really want to make that help easy access.
And when students are facilitating, sorry, this is Megan Shackleton, yep, these conversations, there's often adult participating in the conversation, but it's often the, you know, 15 students are 15 students with a student facilitator that's sitting and having this conversation together. And mm-hmm. There's, again, adult resources available on site or on campus, but not always directly in the conversation. We actually think that's really critical because it ensures that these young people are having a conversation that's relevant and relatable for them. And it ensures that, I mean, we have a 17-question conversation guide for our main tool. There are some conversations that don't get past question 5 because that question is so deeply relatable to whatever that school or situation is in, and that's exactly what we want to see.
And what happens – I don't want to go necessarily to worst-case scenario, but I'm going to. What happens if something gets unearthed that's pretty shocking and concerning? What's the responsibility of the group to report this to the school authorities or law enforcement?
So every school has resource sheets provided. So every student is handed a resource sheet before this workshop begins. And we tell students when we train them that we are not training them to be counselors. I am not a counselor. So we do have counselors in the room, and we help the students know as soon as someone discloses that, we want you to get them immediately to that recess. You're not the snitch. And I think that's the stereotype around this. As soon as someone discloses this type of information, we feel like we're the snitch, we're the person ratting them out. But we lower that barrier by kind of explaining to them how important it is to connect these dots and get them the help that they need.
Especially if you're trying to get to change the norm that bystanders and witnesses don't just stand idly by. I want to reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're talking about how young people here in the Bay Area and around the country are working together to prevent relationship abuse. Do you know a young person involved in an abusive relationship or suspect they might be? Have you been in a dangerous romantic relationship, and what'd you do about it? How'd you get out? We'd like to hear from you. Dial in with your questions and comments at 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KALW website, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. So Olivia Enriquez of Aragon High School, you're a junior there, is that right?
Yeah, I'm a junior at Aragon.
Okay. And so your story of how you decided to bring this One Love to your campus is also an interesting one. Tell us more about it.
Yeah. So I got introduced to One Love through the district. They were having an escalation workshop at Hillsdale High School, and I attended it with my mom, and I really got introduced to the movement, what One Love is about, and I think it's something that's really important for young people to learn, especially in high school, because I think that's when we kind of explore relationships and kind of interact with more people than we did before. And I think it's interesting because when you're just introducing back City Visions and One Love, you used romantic relationships, but something that I really push home to people when I do escalation workshop is that One Love not only applies to romantic relationships, it's applicable to every relationship that you might be going through, whether it's with a friend or your parent or your coach or a teacher. I think what One Love teaches people is really really can be applied to every relationship you experience, and I think that's really important to learn and really important to understand.
Yeah. So just like I asked Jamie, what was it like when you tried to bring this to your campus? Did you get opposition? Were people just welcoming this? Was there kind of sort of a group that was kind of shy to dip their toes in this water?
Yeah. So again, I think a lot of people associate unhealthy and healthy relationships, and it could happen more with romantic relationships. So I think people think, oh, I'm not currently in a romantic relationship, so I don't need this workshop. I don't need to attend this workshop. But again, like I was saying, I really push home to people that this is important for every relationship. So there was that kind of barrier between that and people joining and trying to do the workshop. Like, for example, my first workshop was with three of my friends. And it was only a few of them, but the impact was still really big because they learned so much from the escalation workshop, and they took home what these videos that we show, what they teach, like the difference between that's love and that's not love. After watching that, my friends still use those two terms. They use it every day to this day, actually. We go through our school day, our regular day, and we label a behavior, say, oh, that's not love, or oh, that's love, whether it's like in a joke or it's actually serious. And I think that shows a lot because it shows the impact of what One Love is trying to teach and what One Love is trying to teach through a big escalation workshop or even like showing couplets.
Mm. And Megan Gray, how is the curriculum or process adapted when you're talking about high schoolers?
Definitely. So when we started on college campuses. Yardley was a college student. We thought that was our target audience. Quickly, we heard that this is impactful, but if you want to change the norms, it's high school. Capture us before we get in those first relationships. So we took that core tool, our 90-minute escalation workshop, we brought it to high school students. And that's where students really understood and felt impacted by this work. So during that conversation, students learn not only the early warning signs, but they learn also how to avoid them, how to set boundaries, how to talk about it with their partners. And that starts with friendships. So we have curriculum, as she mentioned, the couplets, that goes all the way down to middle school. Because what I believe is that if we don't talk about these behaviors, these unhealthy things with our friends, then they're going to trickle into our romantic relationships. So we really want students having these conversations early on, as little as 5th, 6th grade, talking about what is and isn't okay with your friendships so that you're comfortable enough to say it to a romantic partner when you become of age.
And you mentioned there, Olivia, this that's love, that's not love. And even though you're saying these skills are broadly applicable to all types of relationships, that That is something I've heard echoed a lot on the website of One Love. And I wanted to take us to a clip from your website that I think would kind of get us to the next part of our conversation, which is to really get into the meat of what makes a relationship healthy or unhealthy. So let's go ahead and play this clip. It's
'cause I love you. I want to be your only guy.
Because I love you, skip class with me. Let's stay in bed today.
Because I love you, I just want to be with you so freaking much. Because I love you.
I waited for you after Ken Lab.
You were walking with Mark?
Because I love you.
You shouldn't be hanging out with that dude.
You should know how dumb that makes me look. I don't care if she's your lab partner.
Why do you have texts from him?
Because I love you. This number? Delete.
Because I love you. This Jason number?
Delete.
And Ben?
Delete.
Because I love you, I should smash your phone.
I'll let you give me your password instead. Because I love you.
I will check your texts every day.
You got lucky. Because I love you.
Because I love you.
You think it's okay?
Because I love you. You understand?
Because I love you, you stop talking to your classmates. And you feel completely alone.
Because I love you. That's not love.
So that's pretty powerful. Megan Shackleton, tell us about how this became one of the key messages that these trainings try to pass on.
So most of the content we create is in response to what we're hearing from young people. And so, as I referenced before, we really were hearing loud and clear that there's this gray area around emotional abuse, and particularly around control and manipulation and some of these aspects that you hear here. But the other big piece is that because these unhealthy relationships are very often young people's first and second relationships, there's a confusion about the difference between healthy passion and unhealthy passion. So what you hear in Because I Love You is these things that could sort of feel like, oh, this is what passion is, and this is what love is, and this is what it looks like. So therefore, you know, it must be love if my partner only wants to spend their time with me, or it must be love if my partner doesn't want me spending time with my friends, or it must be love if they want to look at my phone and make sure I'm not talking to other people. And to be fair, most young people haven't had a more positive experience to contrast that to understand that's not love. And so that's where we get this sort of that's love, that's not love language. And really what we found is that this example, which is a part of our That's Not Love series, which has been seen over 86 million times online, is really people watch it and they see themselves, they see their friends in a way that they had never anticipated before. We know that there are counselors that use these tools, and they'll be trying over and over again to help young people understand what they're experiencing in their relationship, and they'll show this clip and they'll break down in tears recognizing that's what I'm experiencing, and I knew it didn't feel right, but I didn't have the language for it or the understanding for it. So we really, throughout our That's Not Love campaign, it really is focused on these aspects of emotional abuse and using pretty blunt language and sometimes triggering language that forces people to open their eyes to the things they're seeing around them every day and just not recognizing as unhealthy or abusive behaviors.
Mm-hmm. So let's name them. I don't know. Can you walk us through, Megan Gray, what are the signs of an unhealthy relationship?
Yes. So I can walk you through a couple. We have control. So trying to know where your partner is all the time, sending those texts, having their Find My Friends location on your phone, intensity, always wanting to be with that person, not wanting to share them with the other person, isolation, telling them who they can and can't hang out with, deflecting responsibility, trying to guilt them into gaslighting and believing that it's actually them that's the problem and not you. Those are a few to name offhand. I would even like to add like what Megan was saying about Because I Love You. I remember I was in college when I was actually on the NFL Network, and it came on TV, and everyone in the room went silent. And we realized that every single one of us had said the opening line, Because I love you, skip class with me. Let's go get lunch. To each other and to our partners, and that's when I realized that we needed to get more involved in this content and how much it resonated with us and changed the way we saw it.
What I noticed in the progression of the audio there was that it pretty quickly escalates, right, from something that's tender and trying to make connection and display how people are endearing or trying to endear one to each other. But I imagine in relationships it's a little bit more gradual and a little bit unnoticeable. Say a little bit more about how you help those who attend these sessions understand and be able to know that, to see it, because it might not be obvious at first, I imagine.
This is Megan Charlton. I'll start and then let Megan Gray jump in. But it you're exactly right that this it is an escalation over time. And most people who are in unhealthy or abusive relationships, the relationship starts out as the best relationship you've ever had. It is usually really incredible and wonderful. And these unhealthy behaviors sort of gradually creep in over time. But one of the earliest behaviors is typically around isolation and sort of pulling you away from your friends and your friend group, which make as those other it enables the other behaviors to escalate a lot quicker once you're sort of isolated from your core support network and friends. And so it's a lot of the reason that we focus so much on helping other people understand those early warning signs and not be offended when you see your friend not wanting to spend time with you, and seeing that often that isolation is really challenging for this bystander piece, because friends often take offense when their friend pulls away, and helping understand that there's actually something critically important there in that moment. Megan?
Oh, escalation does a great job of this, showing it very gradually. And one of the first questions we ask is, when was the first time you noticed something was wrong with the main character? And right away, everyone jumps to that physical abuse. Well, he shoved her on the bed. And we always say, yes, you're correct. We know that punching and kicking is bad. I always say the first thing they teach us in kindergarten is not to bite the kid sitting next to you. But what did you notice sooner? And really give students the opportunity to sit there and think. Well, he did show up a little bit. He showed up after class. He didn't ask. Or he did change her password. I noticed that happening. And he told her not to hang out with Meg anymore. And putting those words on the board, that manipulation, isolation, guilting I touched on earlier, and giving them a chance to connect what they saw in the film to the actual language behind it is key. And that's why I love this model of film-based content followed by the discussion, because they know what they're seeing, but until they hear their peers say, this is wrong, this is not okay, that's when they really click. Mm.
So Jamie and Olivia, I want to invite you to speak to how this content really resonates with you and with your peers. Let's start with you, Olivia.
Yeah, like Megan Gray was saying, I think the film-based content really helps with students realize what the difference between unhealthy and healthy relationships are. I think once they see the relationships in, or the actions and the behaviors in the movie, it really opens their eyes to what they should and shouldn't be doing and what others should and shouldn't be doing. And it really drops down that barrier of talking about it. They feel more comfortable talking about it because they see other people do it. They kind of understand more of what the behaviors are and how they should pay more attention to it. So I think the film-based content really does help people talk about it and people understand the differences.
Mm. And Jamie?
Speaking from a college campus, Because I Love You, that hit, that was the first, escalation workshop that we all saw. And I think those words really hide the fact that there is, something bad happening. Like we've all been saying, those unhealthy behaviors in the relationship. And, it's just, sometimes you just have to see it, before. Sometimes the peers, you'll be talking to them about it and saying, these are the unhealthy behaviors happening, but sometimes you just have to sit them in front, of the screen and show them this video. I've done that multiple times, and I show them the, Because I Love You video, that's not love, They are like, whoa, I've had someone who just break down crying in front of me, like, I'm in this right now, and that's where it starts, so.
Go ahead.
And I'll add that most of our gut instinct is when we see our friends in a bad situation, we want to go, get out. They're not good for you. We don't want you in this situation anymore. But One Love really teaches that that's not the right approach. And that was huge to me, because I was 15 when Yardley Love was killed, and I promised myself none of my friends are going to be in this situation. But I always use that approach. Break up with them. They're bad for you. This isn't the right relationship. And One Love really teaches that you need to help them come to that conclusion on their own.
Definitely.
Because the only person that can get yourself out of an unhealthy situation is you. So we really empower students to recognize a sign and then have these conversations. We teach kids to label the behaviors. So focus on what their partner's doing them. I always tell students, ask them how it makes them feel. That's a huge one. These open-ended questions, we don't talk about relationships. So give them the space to talk about what they're feeling, how this behavior makes them feel, and what they could do about it.
Like when he or she sends you that text saying, I don't want you going to that party, there's going to be guys there, you're going to be in a swimsuit. And it's like, that's, you know, starts with open-ended, you know, we'll be like, well, how does that make you feel? He just sent that to you and you can't go to a party, you know, a pool party now because you're going to be in a swimsuit. And that's, you know, again, that's when they start to realize, like, that's like manipulation and controlling me right there. So, again, it starts with us and, you know, hopefully they see it through their own eyes.
I want to reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache. And tonight we're talking about how young people are working together to make relationships healthier. We are joined in the studio by Megan Shackleton, the Bay Area Executive Director of the One Love Foundation, that is trying to spread these skills to teens and preteens around our area to help change the norms about how people respond to the signs of an unhealthy relationship, whether you're directly involved in one or witnessing it in a friend. We're also joined by Megan Gray, the West Coast Engagement Coordinator for One Love. And then we have two students here, Jamie Jay, a junior at the University of San Francisco, and the college ambassador for the One Love Foundation on campus, and Olivia Enriquez, a junior at Aragon High School in San Mateo. And she is the One Love's teen ambassador. One Love's teen ambassador in the Bay Area. So as always, we want to hear from you. The number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment to the KLW website, or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. So the conversation, again, has gone back and forth between what an individual can do and how it's kind of key to getting out of a relationship really depends on the individual who's in it, but also how to break through resistance, hesitation, fear of the bystanders stepping up and speaking up. So tell us, Megan Shackleton, how did you and One Love come about trying to break through that? Break through the individuals who are witnessing something and didn't speak out.
So I think a lot of it stemmed back from exactly from Yardley's story and from the fact that her friends had seen these signs and didn't have any idea what they were seeing, and just realizing the prevalence of this issue. And one of the things that from the beginning Sharon Love said is that she wanted to bring this issue out of the dark and into the light and make it a more comfortable place to have this conversation. And we realized, to Megan's point earlier, that when you people don't want to associate with domestic violence or relationship abuse, they're not going to show up to a conversation that's they think is sort of about that, because most people don't associate it with it themselves. But what we did find is that people want to talk about healthy and unhealthy relationships, and they want to talk about how they can support healthy relationships among them. And so it just, not only is it critical in terms of what we're trying to achieve to support and empower friends and community members, but it also makes it a safe and inclusive conversation for those for young people to have.
And how do you work through concerns that, you know, like if a friend speaks up about concern for a friend, that, you know, that friendship may be on the line and that friendship might end? Megan Gray.
So we always tell students it's important to just start the conversation early. So the first thing, piece of advice I give every student is this conversation happens as soon as your friend gets in a relationship. You want to have the conversation early, even if they're not a bad person. That way, if they start showing warning signs, you're not coming out of left field saying, hey, I've noticed they're checking your texts, like coming out of left field, don't really talk to you about your relationship, but I'm going to give you my 2 cents. We try and set that conversation early. And then we always tell students, if you're not sure if what you're seeing is bad, ask someone else in the friend group. You're likely to hear that someone else is seeing a warning sign. And if you don't have this conversation alone, why don't two of you take your friend out to coffee, have a conversation, and use these open-ended questions? I think that's really key, is asking people how they feel so they don't get defensive, so that they want to have this conversation and keep it open. And we do remind students that sometimes you might get pushed away, but we really encourage them to be consistent, even if it's just sending a weekly text being like, hey, I'm here for you. If you want to have coffee, you want to have a conversation, I have your back. But because what we've heard from survivors is that it's the people in your life that didn't give up on you that got you out of the relationship in the end.
Mm-hmm. And how often might it happen that if a friend steps up and tries to get their friend to recognize these warning signs, that they might get somehow pulled in to the dynamic in the relationship and perhaps put themselves at risk for escalation because somehow they, you know, they're the one who put this idea, so to speak, in their friend's mind in the eyes of the perpetrator?
So we always say that you as a bystander, your safety is first and foremost. So never put yourself in a situation where you think that that there could be any harm to you. And so even when it comes to a friend breaking up with somebody in an unhealthy relationship, we educate about safety planning and the importance of everyone and their sort of it being public and open and visible so that these things aren't happening behind closed doors. And so we try to ensure that the friends are bringing this conversation forward in a way that's not sort of pulling them into it, if that makes sense, trying to expose it and have it be more of an open conversation. And we also encourage friends to bring this conversation up together and not in a intervention type of way, but in a way that is continually reinforcing the messages from different directions and from different friends so that it isn't just one person who's seen as the person who ruined this relationship. Would you?
This is Megan Gray. I would add that we always say that a friend can use a local resource too. It's not just for the people in the relationship. Anyone can call these hotlines. Anyone can get that support. And you always see kids' eyes kind of open up and be like, oh, wait, everyone can use this? They're not going to ask my name or where I'm from or where I live. We really do want to lower that barrier so that everyone feels safe to get involved.
Hmm. And so let's go to a caller here. We have Dorothea from Berkeley. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I have two grandgirls in elementary school still, but it goes to sixth grade, and I feel like your program would be important to start very, very early. Many of these young women are already, they've gone through puberty, and sexuality is definitely on their minds. So I was wondering, do you think you could have some success in teaching these workshops at that level?
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
It's a great question, and similar to what Megan said, when we started on college campuses, we were told we needed to start younger, so we moved into high school. When we got on high school campuses, we were told we needed to start younger, so we went into middle school. Since we work on middle school campuses, we've been told we need to go younger and talk about healthy friendships in elementary school. Right now, we are focused on the middle high school college age range, mainly because we feel like we can't be all things for all people. But we are really building out and bolstering our middle school tools in a way that enables them to be applicable to healthy friendships. And so we could see those being used by fifth and sixth graders to start this conversation. And again, we think that it's really a much safer place to start the conversation around healthy friendships and a much more accessible place when students are young. We really encourage parents to your granddaughters to be able to start this conversation about what it means to be in a healthy friendship so that then even when they are entering romantic relationships and they may or may not feel comfortable talking to their parents or grandparents about it, they'll be translating the same messages around setting barriers, around healthy communications, around respect, and around trust. And so the more we can convey those messages early, the better.
And have you run into any parental opposition to this? This is too much, too fast for my child. They shouldn't even be thinking about relationships. Have you had to navigate that?
In the Bay Area, really not much at all. And there have been some other communities nationally where we've had a little bit more pushback, where people have felt that this is not something their kids are experiencing. But we really are very fortunate here that most parents are really enthusiastic about bringing this education. And I think both parents and educators alike, their responsiveness to this is, I think, to me really demonstrates what a relevant issue it is, because they are seeing it every day and they're seeing the way these young people treat each other and the importance of changing the conversation. And so we really have had very little pushback in that regard.
And I'll add that parents actually go online and use our content. What's unique is most of our film-based content and discussion guides are free and downloadable on our websites. So I'm constantly hearing from parents, I actually showed my kid your content, and we had a conversation about it. I whip out an iPad on the field and I show my middle schoolers a couplet in between drills and say, what's love and what's not love about this? And they're so excited. We did all weekend that we were at hometown days, down on the peninsula, and kids were spinning the wheel and telling us their stories about healthy and unhealthy passion in these behaviors. So the content can be used younger and younger. What I love about the couplets is they're cartoons, so they're little blobs, and they can really reflect that friendship behavior, so we have parents using them with these young kids.
Mm. So I want to get to an email for Nancy, who says, my niece was 18. She was an absolutely gorgeous, outgoing, bubbly, seemingly happy girl that had it all, a Division I athlete like Yardley Love, captain of several varsity sports teams, her art shown in galleries, just accepted to Stanford University, sweet, popular girl with tons of friends and a devoted boyfriend. Turns out that that boyfriend had been abusing her for years. She hid her bruises, her physical and emotional pain from everyone. Her parents are both well-educated, involved, loving, and active in her life. They had no idea. Her best friend had no idea. It was not until she fell into a very deep depression in college that she finally told her secret. She has a beautiful family now, four little boys, but the pain is still there, and it always will be. How does this story speak to you?
We hear these stories, unfortunately, all the time. What's wonderful is that this young woman was able to get help and make it out on the other side, and to embrace what it means to be in a healthy relationship. And our goal is that you don't have to go through an unhealthy relationship to understand and appreciate what a healthy relationship looks like. And so we wish we could be helping women like her sooner, and her friends, and giving them the tools to recognize before there are even scars to hide that these relationships you need to get out of. So our goal, the way we think about this work, is that we are trying to address almost the pre-disease state of abuse. We're trying to address this before it actually even escalates into abuse. And so that way people have the tools and resources to get out of these conversations or these relationship sooner, and never end up with that residual pain and experience through their life.
Put out the phone number again if you want to join us here on City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. If you want to talk with us tonight about how to prevent relationship abuse, the number to dial is 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@KALW.org, post a comment at our website, or tweet us at City Visions KALW. We have a question. Another email here from Anna in Marin. I'm a freshman in high school. As a teenager, I've noticed that social media has a large impact on how we perceive ourselves and our relationships. How does social media play a role in abusive relationships? You're nodding your head there, Jamie. Why don't you take that one?
Social media is huge. I mean, it's a growing thing. We're always on Snapchat, Instagram. You know, it's a new way of, you know, talking with one another. You know, recently we just had hashtag behind the posts come out with One Love, and it talks about the, you know, 10 unhealthy behaviors in a relationship, and it shows what really happens behind that post. You know, getting those flowers really came from a, you know, a heated argument or a, you know, kick. So social media is just huge. I mean, everyone does like, oh, relationship goals. Wow, like, look at them. They're perfect. But really, behind that post, there's arguments happening. There's unhealthy behaviors. And I think that's what, you know, especially, you know, high schoolers, college, you know, when we're getting into that social media realm, that we need to watch out, that there's a lot more to that post than what's really being seen, you know, on that iPhone screen or whatnot.
Megan Gray, you want to add something there?
Yes, I will say I always bring up Instagram in every workshop, and that we all have social media, and I'm never going to tell a student to get off social media, but I am going to tell them to use it as a jumping off point. So with Instagram particularly, I always say, if you see a post, ask a question. That's your opening. You have an opportunity to say, hey, noticed you're in a new relationship. How's it going? What's it like? So it's a great chance for students to start having that conversation with one another. And I will also say that we also talk a lot about virtual boundaries, because some of us might like Snapchat and others might not. So you have to be comfortable to talk about what you want off social media with your relationship. So we need to break this down for students and say, is it okay for someone to have your passwords? Is it okay for them to want to know who's on your top Snapchat? And really break down what a virtual boundary looks like for them, and have them talk about communicating to their partner and starting with their friends. Because what I see is a lot of these virtual boundaries actually start with their friends. Why did you post an Instagram with her? We don't like her. Sarah isn't in our friend group. These conversations have to start early on with our friends, so that when we get in romantic relationships, they're already set.
Yeah, that reminds me. We did a show a few weeks ago about virtual reality and how we're going to navigate all of the things that can go wrong there. And this is yet another example of that. We have less than 10 minutes left. I wanted to – we've talked about parents. What's their role here? I know that the One Love Foundation approach is to train the trainer, meaning the peers, and to get them to do the heavy lifting, as it were, in terms of raising awareness. How are parents involved, getting involved, or how can parents who might be listening get involved?
That's a great question. So I'll start by saying that parents play a critical role in this conversation with their children, that by moving into the middle school and high school space, we recognize that by supporting those that are around a young person, that includes their parents. And so we often encourage parents to start this conversation sooner. One of the key pieces that we try to convey that we've learned from talking to survivors is that there's sort of implicit pressures that parents are setting on young people in their relationships, one being the implicit social pressure that a relationship is an accomplishment and something that one should strive for, that you should have a prom date or you should have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. Most parents weren't explicitly saying that, but young people had experience in their life that, or had sensed that that was something their parents were wanting of them. Similarly, on the flip side, that there was this sense that a relationship not working out would be seen as a failure and would be seen as getting a C on a test or you know, losing your soccer game, and that parents would be disappointed in you, which we all know as adults that relationships are things that some work, some don't, and that's not something to be considered an accomplishment or a failure. So we really try to encourage parents to make it very clear to their student or to their children from the beginning that all that matters to them is that their kids are in healthy relationships, if anything at all, and what that actually means, and reinforcing the behaviors around healthy relationships and what those look like. And parents can definitely get more involved. We're really looking to mobilize the community. A lot of the reason we launched this, our regional strategy, the Bay Area was actually our first regional office for One Love, was to mobilize people in this conversation. And so we encourage parents to help us, to introduce us to schools, to host workshops. We actually have parents who, Olivia's mom has actually hosted a screening in her workshop for other parents, helping us to build our community and our network and spread this word further. And so we would love to talk to more parents about the way that they can help us reinforce this message in the community.
Olivia.
Yeah, I was actually going to talk about that. I've done something called a living room workshop with my mom, and it's a great way for parents and students to communicate about this together. So the education happens separately. The parents will have their own workshop with a different film-based content, and the teens will have their own workshop led by a teen, and the adults will be led by a One Love rep. And then afterwards, they'll be taught about the signs of an unhealthy and healthy relationship. And then after those two separate workshops, the student and the parent could come together and talk about what they learned. And they could talk about, you know, they could talk about what they learned in the parent workshop and what they talked about in the student workshop. It may be different. It may be the same. But that those two workshops kind of set the give them that platform to talk about these kind of things and kind of introduces them to this topic. And so with that, it's so much easier to talk about it. And I think it's a great thing that One Love does.
How hard was it to get your mom to host this event and to have this conversation with
you? It actually wasn't that hard at all. So since my mom and I went to the first One Love workshop together and we were both really inspired by the movement, we were like, oh my gosh, we need to jump on this. We need to do this. I think it's something that's very important for parents and students to learn. So we kind of just did it together, and we introduced it to our friends and our family, and they were on top of it as well. And so it actually wasn't that hard to introduce.
Great. Megan Gray, I just wanted to take a pivot here. We've talked about how one in three women and one in four men are potentially going to experience an abusive relationship. Tell us about how your curriculum also addresses same-sex relationships.
So the statistics are very high for that group as well. So 39% of men and 50% of women in the LGBT community also face unhealthy relationships. So we do a very inclusive approach. Experts have shown that the behaviors are the same across the board. So we try and incorporate everyone into this conversation. I think that's what's great about using these healthy and unhealthy, that's not love, that's love terminology, is that everyone can relate to these wordings and these behaviors and apply it to their life. Sorry, I was going to add to the parent piece that we actually, any high school we walk into, we also encourage a parent workshop because we believe that having this piece of education as a conversation for both parents and students alike is a very grounding way to have this conversation.
Hmm. And Jamie, tell us what's coming up next at USF, and how are you reaching out to other Bay Area colleges to spread this?
I know a few of the reps at Santa Clara, Berkeley. We've all chatted here and there, but I think we focus on our areas first before we can start spreading and growing together. But we all are always seeing the. What we're doing with different workshops, hearing about it, and, just trying to get advice from one another on how to approach certain, areas or focus groups at schools.
Mm. And have you started making any of your own content?
Making my own content?
Meaning your chapter. Right?
Oh, my chapter. Oh, got it. I think, like what Megan Gray said, our next goal is, in this coming school year in the fall, start with the orientation. That's a huge, reaches to all the freshmen right there going into, again, their first, second relationships, possibly the real ones, that are going to be happening, and just start, showing them that these are the behaviors we've got to watch out for. So orientation's going to be happening, hit the Greek community as well, and also spread to the athletes. So. Yeah.
And Olivia, what's next at Aragon High School?
So I'm trying really hard to get a One Love program into the health health class at Aragon. It's a class that every freshman and incoming student, new incoming student, has to go through. They teach about sex, drugs, and I think One Love and what they teach about unhealthy and healthy relationships fits perfectly into that. So I think that's a great way to... educate students at Aragon.
And Olivia is also a member of our teen ambassador program that goes beyond Aragon's campus. And so she's actually one of our founding members that it's grown incredibly quickly. We have over 30 teen ambassadors now across the Bay Area. And I would love if you just share sort of what you're doing as a teen ambassador and what that looks like.
Yeah. So as a teen ambassador, I have held a lot of, I've held a lot of community-based workshops. So I put together a escalation workshop at the San Mateo Public Library. I targeted students at the three high schools in San Mateo, Hillsdale, San Mateo, and Aragon. As a teen ambassador, I was trained to do the escalation workshop and how to lead it and how to start that discussion. I'm also working on trying to get Yards for Your Leave for Aragon for next year. As a teen ambassador, I just try to spread the movement and try to educate people about One Love and what they're trying to do.
Plus schoolwork and all those things.
and towards our goal of it being a community-driven conversation, I think this is one of our sort of the core of what we're doing. And so our teen ambassadors are both doing work on their individual campuses, but then they're working together to create efforts across the community. So, for example, they actually raised money on their own to get a spot in the Pride Parade and a booth at the Pride Parade. And I think it's a perfect example of we can't wait to have young people holding the banner of healthy relationships in our mm-hmm. community. Similarly, Megan mentioned Hometown Days this weekend. Olivia was at the booth and several of other teen ambassadors. It shouldn't be me and my staff standing here saying why healthy relationships matter. It should be young people saying we care about healthy relationships and we're embracing this in our community. And so it's just a perfect example of that, and we've been so grateful.
And Megan Gray, last word to you. If someone out there listening wants to get involved, wants to bring this to their school or community, what can they do?
You can go on our website, www.joinonelove.org. You can find our content to bring to your school directly. You can contact us. We respond in 24 hours, and you get to work with One Love staff, and we are passionate about bringing this to your school. I wake up every day excited to talk to each and every one of you.
Great, and we'll put a link to One Love's website on our website. Well, I want to thank you all. My guests tonight were Megan Shackleton and Megan Gray of the One Love Foundation. We also heard from two students here in the Bay Area, Jamie Jay and Olivia Enriquez. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening.
Thank you so much for having us.
For a link to this and other City Visions shows to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at klw.org. Our engineer this evening was Debbie Kennedy. Tonight's show was produced by Jennifer Ruick. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. We'll be off next week. Join us in 2 weeks. Good night. Have a great week.